about the so-called war on terror in these epic historical terms of a battle of civilization of the Christian world versus the Islamic world. Also, if you look at the Prince family and their history, they've been very, very dedicated to funding radical right-wing religious causes in the United States. One of Eric Prince's closest friends for much of his life was Chuck Colson, who was, of course, Nixon's hatchet man during the Watergate scandal, the author of Nixon's Enemies List, who then went to prison, came out as this this sort of evangelical Christian who spent much of his life then trying to fight the scourge of Islam within America's prisons. I mean, Eric Prince is surrounded by very radical right-wing Christians. And you know, the fact that he says, oh, we want to go and fight ISIS right now, first of all, they want to make money off of it. Secondly, it plays into Eric Prince's worldview that Islam is the enemy.
We're going to have to leave it there. Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of TheIntercept.org, author of the best-selling book, Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. His most recent book, Dirty Wars, The World's Battlefield, is out in paperback. We'll link to your piece, Blackwater Founder Remains Free and Rich While His Former Employees Go Down on Murder Charges. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking in Vienna, Austria, Friday at an event hosted by ORF, Austria's public broadcaster. Then on Saturday, I'll be speaking at the Elevate Festival in Graz, Austria. Check our website for details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkman, Afel Saramate, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hani Masood, Ravi Karan, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today, we'll talk about current Oregon ballot measures, and we'll be joined by Jose Antonio Vargas from the Yes on 88 campaign.
Help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your used car, truck, motorcycle, boat, or any other vehicle. We'll transform the old machine into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world. For more information about vehicle donation, call 1-877-KBOO123 or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African high life, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Volunteers of America, Oregon, committed to helping our community's most vulnerable people for over 100 years and to giving them a hand up rather than a hand out. More information is available on the web at voaorg.org.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. Today, we're going to be talking about the upcoming election, November 4th. If you've been living under a rock, is in fact the general election day. As you know, KBOO does not endorse candidates, and so please don't call me with your choice of candidates for public office, but would love to hear from you about your thinking on the ballot measures that we will be considering. We don't have that many ballot measures this year. I guess that's a good thing. But we do have some very complex ballot measures. We will spend some time in the later part of the program talking about one of the ballot measures, ballot measure 88, which is a ballot measure that would allow for ID cards for people who cannot provide a birth certificate or proof of being a resident of Oregon. This would allow them to be able to drive and do normal business like the rest of us who have to get around in the city of Portland. We're going to spend some time talking about that in the second half hour of the program because I have a special guest who will be joining me. His name is Jose Antonio Vargas. And if his name is familiar, it should be because he's a journalist, he's a filmmaker, and he's a founder of an organization called Defined America, which is a campaign that seeks to elevate the immigration conversation. So we're going to spend some time talking to Jose Antonio Vargas and talking about his story as a immigrant to the United States. But before then, we're going to talk about some other ballot measures, and I'm going to give you some hints that I use when I have absolutely no clue about various ballot measures, whether I should support them or not. And so for me, one of the first things I do is look at a ballot measure to see who's supporting it and who's opposed to it. And if you are a political geek like me, you probably read every single word of the text in a ballot measure, which is extremely important because Oregonians have been fooled in the past about thinking they were voting for one thing and finding out after Election Day that they voted for something totally different. And so it's important to actually read the text of the measure. I know it's very dry. It's very legislative-like, but it's important to know basically the gist of what each ballot measure says it's going to do or not do. In addition to that, I also like to see who is supporting it, so who has the arguments in favor and who has arguments in opposition to the various ballot measures. And we have a new thing in Oregon, which is a legislative committee that actually reviews each ballot measure, and it's put together statewide. There's a group of just regular folks who come together. People make presentations to them about the ballot measures, and then their opinion is actually, their vote is recorded in the voter's pamphlet for people to utilize. I have a caller on the line, and we've only just begun, so let me get to Rolf and see what's on his mind. Good morning, Rolf. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Joanne. First of all, I just want to say I'm really mad at both the Willie Week and the Mercury for saying saying to not vote for ballot measure 92. And then the other thing, you said that people calling in can't endorse candidates, but I think they can. It's just the Air Post cannot endorse them. But that's,
well, I mean, it's better to not even get into the mix, right?
Oh, okay.
It's like since we can't take a position on candidates, it's not even worth having the conversation.
I agree with that, I guess. But,
and so you are concerned that the Weekly and Daily have come out in opposition to Measure 92.
Well, both the Mercury and the Willamette Weekly, so both these two weeklies, and the Willamette Week even had a big ad for no on 92. So I think they just got I almost feel like they got paid off, you know.
Well, I can certainly understand how you would come to that conclusion. So for people who don't know, this measure would require GMO labeling on food in Oregon. And, you know, I have to say, I've seen the ads and I've gotten the mailings in the mail. And I can see how regular people would be a bit confused about this measure. So why are you supporting it?
Oh, well, because I just think we need to know what's in the foods. I think that all the countries in Europe have GMO labeling. I mean, we're just, and it's, and the, I think it's, they're saying, oh, it's going to cost a lot more. But, you know, they said the same thing when they said the, you know, nutritional stuff on labeling. It was going to suddenly raise the prices of food a huge amount, and it didn't. And it's, you know, it's just transparency.
And so, they've said the same thing about the bottle bill, right?
Yeah, the bottle bill, too. It's, yeah. Right. So I just think there's just too much lying in the agricultural industry about it. And I just feel like it should happen. And they're, of course, going to spend a huge amount of money to stop it from happening. And it's not because they're worried about people paying too much for food.
But, and, you know, you raise a really good point. I mean, I agree with you. I think that knowing what's in our food is a good thing. And then you can decide whether you want to buy it or not. I think it's a really good thing. But, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that the outlets that make the most money during election season, which is print media and TV media, actually support the status quo. So we shouldn't be that surprised. But, you know, Oregonians are a pretty smart group. The question is, in a off presidential election year,
getting enough people to get in there.
Yes, getting enough.
So many people don't vote during the off election, and it's kind of.
Well, so you're bringing up one of my pet peeve ones, which is Measure 90, which is the top two primary.
Right. And the Willie Week also said to vote no, or to vote yes on that, and that really got me, too. I mean, now, I was like, come on. I mean, at least the Mercury said to vote no on it, but because that's a bad ballot measure.
Well, it's a ballot measure that actually does just the opposite of what it says it would do. It's one that says, oh, all of a sudden we'll have more choices in a general election. But if you read the measure, what you find is that we will actually have less choices.
You only have two choices in the general election when normally you have, five or six.
Well, and if you look at the current voters pamphlet, what you see is a description of all political parties in Oregon, which would probably disappear under that measure because, based on my understanding, we're not even sure that third parties would show up at all under that measure. And so it's one of those measures that is looking for a problem to solve and actually will create, I think, a bigger problem.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's kind of like it's a measure that the rich people, the 0.1%ers seem to really like.
Yeah,
you know, it's like Bloomberg is giving money to it, and it's these rich people are like throwing money into it.
So here's rocket science, right? So if right now the only people that can win elections are people who have an exorbitant amount of cash. And if you create a election system whereby only the people with the most money get heard, therefore they advance to the general election, then it's only about big money.
Now, so, I can see if you had this ballot measure could work if they had instant runoff, like where you had three choices, and then if your first choice wasn't one of the top people, your votes would go to the next choice. You know, there could be something like that, but the way it is, it's bad.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you calling and weighing in on Measure 92. So you and I agree that it's a good measure. We should pass it. We should know what's in our food.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. So we've just already kind of jumped around a bit. I want to go back, though, and actually go in order, to some semblance of order, because there is a measure, Measure 87, Ballot Measure 87, would amend the Constitution and permit state judges permit employment by state judges, by the National Guard, and state public universities. This was a legislative referral. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just wondering how many judges are in the National Guard who are looking to be employed by public universities, but I guess we will find out about that. I guess I am puzzled by the need to change the Constitution because apparently there's a constitutional prohibition against that. And so I guess it's a housekeeping measure is what legislators would call it, and I guess I don't have a real problem with that. So that's Measure 87. Measure 86, however, is the one that I skipped over, which would create a tuition fund at the state level. Another one that would change the Constitution. It would require creation of a fund for Oregonians pursuing post-secondary education and authorizes the state to go into indebtedness to finance this fund. I'm going to go against conventional wisdom and say I have no trust that this legislative body would put this fund together and not raid it the next time there's a financial downturn. So I'm not that big a fan of ballot measure 86. Hopefully someone will call me and tell me why that's a good idea. I'm not sure that the state of Oregon is the right entity to be trying to figure out how to help people pay for college, but I could be talked into another position on that. Ballot measure 89, which is another constitutional amendment that is the Oregon Equal Rights Amendment, which would enshrine equal protection for women in the Constitution. I have a real problem with us doing a lot of things, putting a lot of issues into the Constitution that have no impact. If this measure was going to say that it would require women to have equal pay, then I would be a big fan of this measure. But if it's just putting language in the Constitution that says women are equal in the state constitution, to me, that's it doesn't make sense to me. And so I am a no vote on this particular ballot measure because I don't think language by itself is enough. We still are a state that women make 3/5 of whatever men make in salaries. And so if we were gonna fix that with this ballot measure, I'd say yes. But since we're not, I don't think we need to clutter up our Constitution with a lot of stuff. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, BJ. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Welcome. Did you hear Senator Dennis and Elizabeth speak yesterday at KBOO?
No, I did not.
Oh, that was something.
Huh.
Walked in the door. I couldn't believe it. I had seen him before. And I'm really thinking one of the important ones is our food. I like to know what I'm eating.
Mm.
I like to know what goes on so that I wouldn't be so sick all the time.
Right.
And I am ill, and there's no clear-cut understanding of why people become sick.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of advertisements about it, you know, Ebola, Ebola, this, that, blah. And that's really cancerous, what that is, which is a lesser degree I have now of it, but that's a more severe degree, a higher percentage of death. What particular issue is really important now for seniors? One of them that I'm concerned about is assisted living and hospice type of care. Is there any place I can go to get help with that? And I don't know where it is. That's my question.
So are you currently insured?
Yes.
So I would start with my insurance provider and ask them. Or I would also check in with the Oregon Health Authority and see what they would recommend, because that's the state's health system.
Yep.
But I would check in with my individual provider first, find out what services they offer, and after that, I would check in with the state.
Right, and I talked to the VA about it, and I asked them, and I said, oh, that's not for you, and then, oh, that's not for you, oh, that's not for you. My primary care doctor, but
so
I
the
liked him, so I went along with it, and I've only started renewing my VA recently.
Well, I mean, the VA has its own set of problems, right? It's really hard to get in and get an appointment. But hopefully there are some advocates out now that can actually help you negotiate through the VA system.
Yep.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You do the same. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Herschel. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you. Yeah, on this ballot title, or ballot 87, you kind of mentioned it was a housekeeping measure.
Yeah.
And I see it as a much greater threat than that.
Do you?
Yes. They mention that they did trying to prevent people from serving in two branches of government, the executive branch and the executive branch. And I say, great, let's not have them serving in two branches. But if you were ever practicing civil disobedience, the last thing I'd want to do is go before a judge that was in the National Guard. I mean, that just sounds like, I mean, you're appearing before someone who has already drunk the Kool-Aid. It's just too threatening to me. It was a good idea. Keep the branch of government separate, and it's more than just a housekeeping measure is why I see it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that perspective. National Guard, before we went to permanent war, National Guard, people who served in the National Guard went one weekend a month and a couple of weeks in the summertime. And so other than that time, right, they would be available to work in universities or, you know, take some other kind of employment, right?
Well, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, you'd have time.
Right.
But in order to be in the National Guard, you kind of have to buy into the idea that you're in an institution that gives orders, you follow orders without thinking, there's penalties for not following orders. I mean, it's just kind of a different kind of mentality. And I just don't want that kind of a person sitting on a bench.
Well, do you want that kind of person in a police uniform in your community?
Absolutely not. No.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's very threatening.
All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure that your thought process went all the way through. So I was just checking. Thank you for that perspective. I appreciate it. You have a great day.
Bye now.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm sorry, who was that? Gary. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, this is Harry.
Oh, sorry, Harry.
Hey,
welcome
no
to KBOO.
I'd like to make another comment about the Measure 87 about the judges.
Right.
Is the commander-in-chief of the National Guard is the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So if the governor gets mad at a judge, well, he can send him to Afghanistan and make him point. So he can get rid of a judge, and since he's the commander-in-chief, he can tell the judge what to do. And so I think that's a good reason why to vote no.
Well, that's actually not true. The judge is independent, right? The judge is independently elected. And in fact, if you look at your ballot, you'll see that we have judges that run unopposed. And that's like the normal for judge elections in Oregon.
But if the governor gets upset, he can call him to service.
Well, they can't just call the individual. They'd actually have to call the unit, right?
Well, okay, we're going to send your unit to Afghanistan. See you in 2 years. And I'll appoint a judge to take your place.
Well, I just because you're paranoid doesn't mean the governor wouldn't be out to get a judge. But I don't. I think that that's a stretch to think that a judge that the governor would go that route. But
it's possible. The next measure, of course, is 92, and one reason why I'm going to be voting for it was about 5 years ago. Kellogg's had to recall cornflakes because they put that BT corn made for cattle, they end up getting it and making cornflakes. So they had to recall all of it. And if that GT corn is, you know, we obviously they had a problem with humans eating it.
Right.
But I thought corn was edible for all animals, but
right.
I guess not.
Well, that's a very good point. So, you know, I haven't talked to anyone yet who's actually voting no on Measure 92. So, as I said to a previous caller, the question is how many people will actually turn in their ballots before November 4th. And if people believe it's important that their food is labeled, I hope that will be motivation to get their ballots turned in ahead of time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Sue. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to talk about the ERA amendment. And although I'm not a lawyer, it seems to me that because the whole claim, of course, is that the only protections women have are case law, which could be overturned at any time. And so I think it's really important to pass as a foundation to be able to then work on the issues of equal pay within the state of Oregon. Because if you have that, then you have something to start with in the Constitution.
Well, but don't we already have that in the Constitution? I mean, it's...
No.
It just seems to... Well, the Constitution says... Actually has language that says that that everyone is treated equally, right?
Well, that's the U.S. Constitution. We're talking about the state constitution.
Thank you for your perspective. I don't know that So you're saying that we can't get women equal pay until we have this in the Constitution?
No, I'm saying that it will help us get equal pay. Because if we just put out an equal pay law, people initiative, the likelihood is that people are not gonna all vote for it and pass it, because there's a lot of people that feel a threat from that, and they feel like it's just too expensive and all these things. But if we have something in the Constitution that grounds us and says, it anchors us and says, you know, our constitution of our state now says that women are equal, then I think you have a better argument for it. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer, but that's just my perspective.
Well, I mean, as you were talking, I was thinking, well, then shouldn't we put something in the Constitution that says that we disagree with racism of any kind? So that all people of color are equal in the state, for example. Shouldn't that be?
I love that.
I mean, that's not in the Constitution either, right? And so I think at some point you can add, you know, you can add so much that you dilute all the language in the Constitution. And so, and my point, my original point was, if it's not going to change the fact that women still make less than men, then it just seems like a feel-good measure that does absolutely nothing.
Well, and I guess I'm disputing your
my perception. Yes.
Perception, yeah, because I think that it could, in fact, help us get there.
Well,
I'm
thanks.
I'm looking at it as more baby steps. But anyway, thank you for your job. I love your show.
Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate your perspective. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye. We have another caller. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to K-Boo.
Yeah, Joanne. I'm not Joanne. I'm Sheila, but he missed
me. Oh, hi, Sheila. How are you?
Well, I was down at Yes on 92 last night making phone calls, and I'll tell you, I was depressed. I had so many people hang up. I had people, one said, I'm a farmer and I don't want to vote for 92. Another one said, I don't want to pay any more for my food. I mean, they're buying all this garbage, that the media, the Koch brothers and Monsanto are putting out with their TV ads and their mailers, and it made me sick. I mean, they, you know, don't they realize that if Monsanto's behind it and Pepsi-Cola's behind it and Kellogg's behind it, that it's bad.
It can't be
for
good
us.
For them, right? Right. Well,
I mean,
you know,
I was so upset. I left there so depressed, and I think I was the only one on the phones that had such bad responses. But it's just scary.
Well,
I mean, I'm so afraid this thing is going to go down in flames. They're putting so much money against it that it just makes me sick.
Well, and that's a part of the challenge with our political system, even with ballot measures, is that it's really hard to figure out to follow the money. And so you're absolutely right. I am hopeful that people are paying attention, following the money, looking at who's in support and who's in opposition as they're making their decision with the ballot. So thank you for volunteering your time, and thank you for your call.
Yeah, well, I had another comment.
All right.
Was it 91? That's the best of two candidates. Which is the one? The measure?
Oh no, that is measure 90. The top 90. Two primaries.
You know, I used to think that was a great idea, but with all this money going in now, the ones that buy it. I mean, we can have the Koch brothers putting in $1 billion, and it won't affect their life in one bit. And we'll end up with two right wingers playing against each other.
We could certainly end up in that position with the top two primaries. And my fear is that only people with deep pockets will have access to the ballot.
And, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and that's not the kind of democratic system we want. I mean, the current system is bad enough. We should not.
I used to like the idea of having the two top ones to run against each other. Mm. Now I'm afraid that the two top ones might be those who've got the big bucks behind them, and they could be the ones that we're scared of.
Well, and you may remember last year, it was earlier in the primary, there was such a low voter turnout for the primary that we had incumbents maintain their seat with a vote of 22% of the people, mm-hmm. right? I believe if this top two primary happens, we'll see worse voting results than that. So thank you. I appreciate you calling in and weighing in on those issues.
Thank you, Joanne. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. I'm surprised I'm here at KBOO and no one has actually brought up Measure 91, which is the one that would allow possession, manufacture, sale of marijuana by two adults and subject to state licensing, regulation, and taxation. I'm absolutely surprised to be here at KBOO and no one has brought this up. Yes, this measure is on the ballot. Yes, this is a good measure. Yes, it should be passed. Any questions? I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ted. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, hi.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just have a piece of information for the man that was looking for housing help.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Okay. It's a very complicated system in Oregon, but one resource is the retirementconnection.com.
Retirementconnection.com? Okay.
Yes, and a phone number is 800-462-1316. And they publish a resource book of 200 pages of for Greater Portland and Vancouver area. It is free and has housing stuff, information and everything.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I always say that my listeners are the smartest listeners on the planet because if they have resources, they call up and they make those resources available. Thank you for giving us that information.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. Mm-hmm. And so, as we've been going through ballot measures, so I'm going to go through the list again. We talked about the tuition fund, and I'm kind of like, I'm lukewarm on that one, so I'm a no vote on that at the moment. Measure 87, which clarifies personnel rules for judges, that was a yes. Measure 88, we're going to talk about in just a moment, but that's definitely a yes. Measure 89, the Oregon Equal Rights Amendment, I'm still not convinced that that's worthwhile, so I'm a no on that. Measure 90, top two primaries, I'm definitely a no on that. Measure 91, the marijuana legislation, I'm a yes vote. Measure 92, I'm a yes vote. So now it's all out there. Call me up, abuse me, do what you will, but that's my thinking and I'm not changing it unless you call and give me some compelling reason why. And as I told you at the top of the program, I was going to have this great, fabulous, wonderful guest in my studio, and he has arrived. His name is Jose Antonio Vargas. Welcome to the studio, Jose.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you back here in Oregon again. And I have to tell you, when your story first came out in the New York Times Magazine, I was sitting there with my coffee on a Sunday morning in tears. Because I'm reading this story and it just touched me so deeply. A, because of your honesty, right? Because of you outing yourself. You didn't like wait for somebody else to come around and tap you on the shoulder.
No, I was waiting for that my whole life, and no one was coming, so I figured it was either somebody was going to do it or I had to do it.
Or you had to do it. And so I think many of my audience members may be behind the curve. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to kind of briefly tell this story. So so one day, the New York Times, there was a cover magazine story, and there you were on the front page of the New York Times magazine.
So I was born in the Philippines. My mother sent me to America when I was 12 to live with her parents, my grandparents. Mm-hmm. Thought everything was fine. Right. My grandparents were both naturalized American citizens. Then when I was 16, like any 16-year-old, I went to the DMV to get a driver's permit. Mm-hmm. Didn't tell my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was listening to Boyz II Men and Alanis Morissette in my Walkman as I walked into the DMV.
Right.
And I'm just chilling there, and my name get called, and I give my green card and my passport to the woman at the booth, and she looked at the green card. She didn't look at it very long, I think. Mm. And she just flipped it around a couple of times, and she said, "This is fake.
Whoa.
Don't come back here again." And my instinct was she was lying. Mm-hmm. Like my
she
first
just
thought,
didn't want to serve you.
That, and then I thought, you know, I'm in California. This is 1997, right? And whenever you heard, quote unquote, fake, or quote-unquote illegal, the first thing you thought was Mexican. That's what the media said. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody talked about. And so I thought, wait a second, like, she's probably mistaken. I'm Filipino. Mm-hmm. You know, the Spanish colonialism. That's why my name's Jose. So that was my first instinct.
Right.
But then my grandfather worked graveyard shift, so he was always home during the afternoon. So I was home. I biked home, confronted my grandfather, and then that's when he confirmed what the woman at the DMV said, which is that my license, my green card was fake, and that I shouldn't tell anybody else about it.
That's
how I found out.
What a burden.
And, you know, there was no internet. There was no Google. Mm. So I thought I was the only Filipino, Asian, illegal, quote-unquote, illegal person. But thankfully for me, the following year, my English teacher, Mrs. Dewar, said I asked too many annoying questions and I should do this thing called journalism. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what journalism was. Right. But the moment I thought that you could, the moment I realized that when you write a news story, your name would be in it, mm-hmm. I'm like, wait, you know, if my name can't be on the paper, you know, it can't be on a piece of paper to say that I'm here legally, what if, you know, I'm in the, you know, I'm on the paper.
Right.
So that was my way of kind of getting documented. I know it sounds really weird, but I was 16. I was like, this is how I rationalized, mm-hmm. you know, being on a piece of paper. Because mm-hmm. I mean, we are, by the way, talking about pieces of papers. Let's remember this. Mm-hmm. Like, all the money, all the noise, all the toxicity, all the politics. This is all about pieces of paper. I'm a human being, and mm-hmm. I'm more than a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. And who has access to that
and
piece of
paper? And who has access to that? And, and that's what we're talking about, by the way, about Measure 88, mm-hmm. right? Like, for many people, connecting the dots and realizing that to be undocumented in this country means to not have documents.
Right.
It means that going to work, going to school, dropping the kids off to all of that means having a license so we can actually safely, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. get on the road without peeing our pants when we see a cop. Mm-hmm. and I have to say, by the way, like, part of the reason why I really wanted to be in Oregon, you know, considering this fight is happening, is because I'm eternally grateful to the state. In 2003, when I got offered an internship at the Washington Post, I went to Oregon to get a driver's license. Back then, I could get a driver's license.
It was easy.
Right. And in 2008 is when your governor decided to tighten it up. Mm-hmm. And then thankfully, your current governor decided to actually, you know, have and provide licenses to undocumented people. And that bipartisan bill, you know, law was passed. Mm. But unfortunately, you have this relatively small group of Oregonians who seem to think that they would rather us, you know, just not have any sort of proof of existence. Mm. And I think that's what kind of this is about. Like, y'all know we're here. Y'all know
not going anywhere.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, you know, we go to the same church. We go to the same schools. We drive on the same freeways.
Right.
You know, your economy would collapse without us.
Right?
Is there anything more American than driving?
No. And so what's interesting about So we've just like jumped right into the Measure 88 debate. Like, no, we didn't warn our listeners. Okay, here we go.
But nothing, we know that nothing is happening in Washington, D.C.
Right.
The Democrats and the Republicans are playing pass the tomato or potato, whatever it is. No one wants to touch it. Right. Now, while that is happening, you know that there are undocumented people, neighbors, classmates, and friends who live in your communities.
Right.
How do you think they get around?
Right. And you know they still get around. They have to get around.
They have to get around.
You have to get around if you're going to feed your family, if you're going to go to school, to church, wherever.
CAUSA Oregon, this wonderful group, actually did this multimedia project called 100 Stories. Mm-hmm. When you go to the website, you can see the stories of, you know, people, not all undocumented people, by the way, because we have a thing called a mixed status family, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So one story, for example, is this young boy who's the oldest of three kids, all of them American citizens, mm-hmm. but their parents are undocumented. Mm-hmm. So the children can see the stress mm-hmm. in the parents' eyes, right?
Right.
Worrying about when they might get picked up because they're driving around dropping the kids off to school,
right?
Without a license.
Right.
Now, what's going to happen to those kids if these parents get detained and deported just because they don't have a license?
Well, don't you understand how Oregon works? It's like we care about the kids until we don't. So if you're just joining us, I am talking to Jose Antonio Vargas, who is a reporter, a documentary filmmaker. And here in town, they're just keeping you really, really busy. Well, you don't. I didn't even see a restroom break for you on your itinerary for today.
Well, I mean, it's really, really important that we pass this bill. And it's really important, I think, that Oregonians kind of wake up to the reality that that their undocumented neighbors live in every day.
Well, and the other thing is that that law that was passed didn't just impact people who weren't born in this country. It impacted people like my dad, who at 88 years old, if he had to go and find his birth certificate, would never be able to find it, right? And so therefore would be ineligible to get a driver's license in the state of Oregon. And so even though people who fought to get this on the ballot, thought that they were impacting, as you said, Mexicans, because we have a very narrow view in this country of immigration.
And by the way, I mean, let's actually connect the dots here. I mean, how do you separate, you know, Measure 88 from all the voter ID laws that are passing all around the country? Like, what is this really about?
Well, in the gutting of the Voting Rights Act. I mean, the fact that Congress
in broad daylight.
Yes, yeah. And the silence was deafening. The silence was absolutely deafening. And you think, now what is happening in a country that fought so hard and so long to expand the voting franchise when we allow a Supreme Court to decide, oh, wait a minute, it's really okay to make poor people get more ID. You can use your concealed weapons permit to vote, but you can't
And of course, it's not just poor people. It's people of color in general, right? I mean, this is where I think you see the connection between what's happening to the African-American community and what's happening. I have to tell you, so I've been traveling the country nonstop for the past 3 years. I've been to 44 states, maybe 300 events in 3 years, right?
Wow.
And what I completely underestimated is the level of anti-Latino vitriol in this country.
Really?
Because once people find out that I'm not Mexican, because I'm Filipino, then they feel free to hate on Mexicans in front of me. And it's really fascinating to hear people use illegal and Mexican interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
As if all undocumented people are Mexican, as if there's something wrong with being Mexican.
Right.
As if all of Latin America is Mexico.
Right.
And as you pointed out a couple of minutes ago, this is not just a Mexican Latino issue.
Right.
They're undocumented Asian people. We don't even talk about that.
Right.
There's a lot of undocumented Filipinos in the state that could benefit from something like this. We're not even talking about undocumented Caribbeans and Africans who could benefit from something like this.
Well, and quite frankly, let's talk about just how weak just having a driver's card is. Right? Let's not pretend that this somehow is a fix that actually creates equity in the state that we live in, right?
Well,
this was a very weak legislative middle ground right? Rather than what should have happened, which was driver's license for anyone who could prove they had insurance and were could drive on the roads.
I mean,
right?
If we really care about safety,
right?
If we really care about, so I live in California. Mm-hmm. So Governor Jerry Brown, California is home to 2.1 million undocumented people. Right. Oregon, about 160,000, right? Mm-hmm. So in the state of California, I'm about to get a driver's license in January. Uh-huh. I cannot wait. The excitement is actually so big that I'm actually thinking for the first time of buying a car. I have never thought in my whole life of buying a car. And then I'm thinking, if Measure 88 passes, how many undocumented Oregonians would actually buy a car for the first time? Right. I'm sorry.
Talk about economic.
Are you hearing all the car dealers sitting right now thinking, wait a second.
That's right. Ding, ding, ding.
How
ding.
Much money are we going to actually earn for the insurance that people are going to buy?
Right.
Like, aren't we talking about what's good for the economy? Yes. Mind you, the fact that undocumented Oregonians actually pay millions of dollars in taxes, right? I think the last thing I heard, and this is from the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy, undocumented Oregonians paid $94 million to state and local taxes in 2010. Mm. And those are just the people who are paying into
right?
That's a fact that we don't even hear about when we hear
about. We talk about what you take. We don't talk about what you give. And we have several callers on the line. So we're going to jump into the phone line. Hello, Lewis. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hello. Hello. Yeah.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi. This is a very interesting argument. I mean, conversation, because actually that kind of dove into what I was going to talk about. Number one, they were talking about the when it comes to licensing, giving people who are undocumented licensing, you know, actually it's a good idea because then you'll have less people driving on the streets with not having insurance.
Right.
It's a public safety issue, number one.
Yes.
And then when it comes to that election thing with the top two tier,
right?
I believe, I may be mistaken, but that's what caused Michigan a whole bunch of troubles. So with that, you used to have what was called an open
primary.
Open primary, mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And so the Republicans would always flood the Democratic Party and help. They would have like three or four candidates. They would flood the Democratic Party and break it up.
Right.
So the Democrats, even though they were a larger percentage, they always lost.
You know, so, I think Washington State, and is it California?
California, Washington State, mm-hmm. Nevada, Illinois, New Mexico, Maryland.
So this is kind of spreading across the country.
Because people understand that nothing is happening in Washington. And while nothing is happening in Washington, you know that we're in your communities.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is the point. The point is that this is spreading kind of across the country, and it's spreading because rich people still don't think they control the elections enough. So now they want to, you know, just
They're trying to get ahead of the demographic shift in the United States.
Yes, they are.
Pass laws.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. Mark my words. When whites become
the minority,
we will go up proportional representation. Because they're never going to want... No, look, that's what happened in South Africa.
Right.
That's what happened anywhere white people were no longer the majority. They want to have an equal system where they have input in it.
Right.
And so therefore, you know, unfortunately, institutional racism is still working very well.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Thank you.
Most people don't really realize what's going on.
Right.
And it's just talk. And if this country is going to survive, they're going to have to face this issue. And white people are going to have to step up to the plate because, you know what? It's not going to be able to sustain itself.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much for your comment.
I'm so glad that the gentleman talked about race. Mm-hmm. The woman named Cynthia Kendall. So she's the president of Oregonians for Immigration Reform, which is a very inaccurately named group.
Right, right. Very
they're
conservative.
The group behind,
right.
Well, first of all, they're not for immigration reform because they're for actually deporting all of us out of this country, which is unrealistic and callous and just irresponsible, right? But I thought she made up a really – there was a great story in the Weekly here that she said – this is the quote – we are told all the time that people come here and want to become Americans. I don't think they're interested in becoming U.S. citizens. It's just an organized assault on our culture.
Hmm.
So what is this really about? You know, the gentleman made a point about actually, my next film that I'm working on now is what it means to be young and white in post-Obama America.
Ah.
This is the first school year, 2014-2015, the first school year in American public schools where whites are the minority.
Mm.
We always get asked where we're from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We never seem to turn a table around and ask white people where they're from.
Right.
Like, white
is
not a country.
Right. We don't look at them and go,
so where are you from?
Where were you born? Right.
Irish? Are you from Ireland? Are you from Italy?
Right.
I mean, do you remember how we treated the Irish back in the 1850s after the potato famine? Like,
well, of course. I mean, when I tell the story of immigration in this country, it's normally people come with a route to become white. Right.
There's a book called How the Irish Became White.
Yes.
By a Harvard
professor.
It's a fascinating book.
It's a great book. And it's absolutely true, right?
Yeah.
And except for people of color, right? Because no matter what you do, you're never, ever, ever going to be white, right?
Yeah.
And so we have a path. I mean, now the perfect example is the Ukrainians, you know, in 10 years, they're going to be white, right? And then they're going to have all the privilege that comes along with being white. Right now they're a minority group, and now they have a minority status. But just like every other group that has moved to the United States of America, at some other than people of color,
This is why I'm really fascinated with this, with Cynthia Kendall. I mean, I would love to meet her, because in this profile she talks about how she wants to leave race out of it. You know, she calls them illegal immigrant. By the way, there's nothing illegal about being a human being.
Right.
I am here illegally. I am not illegal. I think that's a pretty simple distinction.
Yes.
She says all of us are illegal immigrants. And she says that this is about laws.
Ah.
Well, law doesn't always equal justice in this country.
Right.
I mean, I don't have to talk to you about that.
No, you don't have to tell me about that.
Let's talk to African American.
Right.
Let's talk to gay Americans,
right?
Let's talk to women who were not treated as equal.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And for us, Measure 88 is about trying to figure out how we can alleviate the struggle and the pain that our undocumented neighbors and friends live with every day. Us getting a license doesn't threaten you.
That's right. That's right. And it's not a license. It's a driver's card.
It's a card.
It's a card.
It doesn't have the privileges of everything that you have. And by the way, if you have a driver's license, can you like hug it, kiss it, frame it, do something, like barbecue it? I don't know. Something. Like, I don't think people understand the privilege that they have in this country.
Right.
And I think that's really important to keep in mind while, your undocumented neighbors and friends can't have the same thing.
Right. And which is really ludicrous, because, I mean, the reason that we license drivers is to make sure that you are driving a street-worthy vehicle, to make sure that you are insured in case you get into an accident, right? It is really, that's it.
To make sure you know how to drive.
To make sure you can drive. We actually have a test before we give you a license, right?
Yes.
It's a written test, and then there's a driving test, right? So there's a whole process to go through. It's not like somebody's giving it to you, right?
Yeah, you have to earn it.
And so, right, it is an earned privilege.
Yeah.
And it is a privilege that's based on the community's safety.
Yeah.
Right? We're all safer if we all have been tested and have a driver's license, right? It's as simple as that. And so while I am a big fan of 88, I am really appalled that in a democratically controlled legislative body, that was the best we could do.
Yeah.
I have to say, you may hear how progressive Oregon is, but when you have a Democrat that's the governor, both houses controlled by the Democratic Party, and they come up with something as minor as a driver card.
Because here's the truth. I mean, we started this conversation about honesty.
Right.
We are not having
an honest
conversation about this issue at
that's
all.
Right.
That's why
right.
everything is a Band-Aid.
Right.
Everything is some sort of like, one step forward, two steps backwards.
And you're supposed to be so thrilled you got that one little step forward. It's like, why aren't you happy yet?
This is the problem, I think, with us being, with this issue being completely married to the politics of the day.
Yes.
Right? And this is, for us, a human fairness issue. This is a human dignity issue.
Right.
Right? And we have to get it out of this box that we put it in.
Right.
This is not some, we pretend, especially in a country that was founded and replenished by immigrants, this is about our country.
Yes.
This is what's really at stake.
That's right. We have another caller on the line. Hello, Richard. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Mrs. Hardesty and Mr. Vargas.
Yes, sir.
You're right. This is not an honest conversation, and I'd like to talk for at least 90 seconds. Is that okay? I'll watch my clock.
Well, I'm going to watch my clock, too, and if you go 91 seconds. Okay.
First of all, to Mr. Vargas, are people who have green cards, are they legally, technically considered members of the general public? And I don't know the answer to that, so can you help me with that?
Can I answer now? I thought you're going
to
answer.
You want your 90 seconds.
So well, no.
I just need this yes or no.
They can't vote. So they're not U.S. citizens. They're legal permanent residents. They're called LPRs.
Okay. And are they members of the general public?
Yes, because they pay taxes. They pay taxes and Social Security like I do as an undocumented worker.
Okay. All right. So with that, yes, I'm going to say in Oregon, we have a law at ORS, the vehicle code, and I take it you haven't had a chance to read much of it, but at ORS 801.305, it defines highway as all of the places that are open, no key required, for use by the general public for vehicles, and not motor vehicles, but vehicles as a matter of right. And I was wondering why green card holders would not want to exercise that right of the general public to use vehicles. And then the other question is, we have an administrative rule that implements the titling and registering of vehicles, and it also implements the licensing of drivers. And this administrative rule specifically says, this is a definition of operating motor vehicles in Oregon. It says, means the physical operation of vehicles for business purposes. And then for Mrs. Hardesty, who's been in the legislature, is there a law, is there a constitutional provision at Article 4, Section 20 that forbids the legislature from enacting a law with more than one subject? Do we have a single subject state? And that's the end of my question. So why don't green card holders exercise the right of the public? And is there a law that says there's only one subject per law? Is there a constitutional provision?
So the answer to your second question is there's a law that requires ballot measures to be one subject only. It doesn't require a law that's passed through the legislature to be limited to one issue. The second question about legal residents have the legal right to get driver's license, to use all the laws and conveniences that they can avail themselves of. So that kind of answers your question. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Okay, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I've been upset for a long time just being a female in this country every day, but I'm also worried about children and their problems, and I was just wondering if anybody has any hope for our Congress and Obama to do something humane about all those dear children, thousands, I guess, coming to our border and being detained or turned away. But anyway, I get off. It's the end of the program. Goodbye.
Thank you, Joanne. Yes, you are correct. It is the end of the program, and I appreciate you getting in before the program was over. I want to thank you so much, Jose Antonio Vargas, for coming here, for sharing your story publicly, quite frankly, because you write so eloquently that I felt like I was taking part of that journey with you when I read your story. And so I thank you so much for being here. I thank you for putting a face on this story, because we just don't know how many of our neighbors, how many of our faith-based partners, what their stories are, how they arrived here, right?
I mean, I just hope when people listen to it, they imagine all these other stories we're not even hearing. Yeah, right. I'm only one person. It's only one story. And there's so many other stories out there that we haven't, that we don't even know about.
It's absolutely true. But I so appreciate you being here, being willing to put yourself on the front line. Yes on 88 is yes. What we are encouraging people to yes. do, loud and clear. If you care about public safety, it's a no-brainer. Thank you so much for
thank
being
you so much
here.
For having me.
Have a fabulous day. And I'm going to bring you back because this is not the last time you and I are going to have this conversation.
That sounds great to me.
I'm Joanne Hardesty. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland a minute before 9 o'clock on your wet Thursday morning. Coming up in 1 hour, join us for Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Actually, no, it's not Flashpoints. It's off today. Instead, we'll be hearing Law and Disorder. Co-host Michael Ratner and Michael Smith talk about their book, Who Killed Che? How the CIA Got Away with Murder. And we hear about former Chicago police commander John Burge, who was convicted of lying about torturing more than 100 African-American men at Chicago police stations. He was recently released from prison. At 11 on Between the Covers, National Book Award winner Richard Powers discusses his latest novel, Orfeo, about modern music and the horrors of the national security state. And at 11:30 on The Film Show, filmmaker Toby Froud explains how a new generation is helping keep the art of puppet animation fresh. Dal Halstead talks about the Hollywood Theater's move to bring 70mm film screenings back to Portland. And OMSI's Christy Pizzio and Russ Rep, talk about the local museum's current animation exhibition. That's all coming up this morning on KBOO, but first it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland performance of Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m., Carla Lara, Honduran jazz singer, songwriter, and political activist, will be performing at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. She is a working artist, journalist, and feminist in a country where resistance in her artistic life has always been tied to political life in Central America. That's Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. More information about this event can be found at KBOO.